Somewhere in your head, there's a number. The assets under management, the AUM you think you need before leaving your firm becomes a real option. I want to ask where that number came from. Ask 10 advisors what it takes to break away, and you'll hear 10 different figures delivered with total confidence, and not one of them came from a spreadsheet. Today, I'll show you why the threshold in your head is folklore and the measurement that actually decides whether you're ready. Quick note before we get into it. Advisor Growth Lab is not a broker-dealer, and everything here is for educational purposes only. It's not individualized legal, tax, or investment advice. Every advisor's situation is different, so treat this as a map, not a set of directions. This one's for any advisor who's caught themselves thinking, I'm not big enough yet. By the end, you'll know why no magic number exists, the four-step math that replaces it, and why the bar you've set is probably higher than your practice requires. Start with the direct answer. There is no minimum AUM to go independent, not a legal one. Forming a registered investment advisor, an RIA, is a filing, not a gate. And no rule asks whether your book is big enough, and not an economic one either, because AUM was never the variable that decides it. Asset size is a proxy for the question that actually matters. Can your revenue support the business you want to run once you're the one paying its costs? Two advisors with the same book size make the point. The first runs a fee-based practice. She bills quarterly on assets that stay put, and her clients followed her from her last seat. The second produces the same top line in a good year, but it arrives in lumps from transactions, and his clients think of themselves as clients of the firm. On paper, identical AUM. In practice, she can carry independent overhead on predictable income, and he'd be financing a fixed cost base with a variable paycheck. Same number, different answer. Any threshold that can't tell those two apart isn't measuring anything. The real measurement starts with the shape of your revenue, not the size of it. Going independent swaps a payout grid for a profit and loss statement. Today, the firm's share of your production covers the office, the technology, and the compliance function. On your own, those costs belong to you, and most of them are fixed. Rent does not care whether this quarter's revenue showed up. Neither does payroll. Recurring fee-based revenue behaves like a salary for the business. It arrives on schedule, and it makes fixed overhead safe to carry. Transactional revenue behaves the way commission income has always behaved. Fine in a strong year, dangerous underneath fixed costs, which means a smaller, steadier practice can often make the move more comfortably than a bigger, lumpier one. It's the most underappreciated fact in the whole breakaway conversation. The second piece is how much of your book is genuinely yours to move. The clients who call you when a parent dies and there's an estate to sort, or when a business sale closes, those are your clients. The clients who came for the name on the building may not be, and loyalty operates inside rules. If both your current firm and your destination have signed the broker protocol, the official protocol text spells out the five pieces of client information a departing advisor may take: name, address, phone number, email address, and account title. Nothing beyond those five, no account numbers, no statements. The protocol is voluntary, though, and some of the biggest names stepped out around 2017 and 2018. So whether it covers you depends on both ends of the move. Model the relationships that are truly yours under whatever rules apply, not your headline AUM. Now the math itself, and it fits on one sheet of paper. Step one, the revenue you'd realistically bring, which is your trailing 12 production discounted by an honest read of that loyalty question. Step two, what you'd keep of it. Independent channels generally let you keep a larger share of each revenue dollar, and that share has to fund the expenses your firm currently absorbs. Step three, subtract a realistic budget for those expenses, size for the model you're considering. Step four, subtract the cost of leaving itself. It gates more exits than the grid ever does. Unvested deferred compensation is typically forfeited on resignation. And if you joined your current seat with a recruiting package, it was almost certainly papered as a forgivable loan. FINRA itself has described recruitment incentives running as much as 2 to 3 times the prior year's commissions and fees. And its guidance walks through an illustrative 9-year note. Leave before a note like that fully forgives and the remaining balance can be clawed back. If what's left clears what you net today, with margin for the risk and the work, the move pencils. If it's a coin flip, you grow first or pick a model with more support. And notice what that test never asks for at any step, an AUM threshold. One more reason the folklore fails, it assumes a single version of independence, a solo advisor standing up a full RIA and buying every piece of infrastructure at retail. That version carries the highest fixed costs, so it demands the most revenue. Supported independence means you own the practice but plug into a platform that carries technology, compliance, and back office for a share of revenue. Tucking into an existing RIA lowers the bar further still because the infrastructure is already built. The revenue a breakaway requires is not a constant. It falls as the support level rises. An advisor who'd be undersized for a solo RIA can be comfortably sized for a tuck-in today in a platform model in 3 years. A single AUM number can't see any of that. So why does the folklore survive? Because the number in your head was built out of caution, not calculation, and nobody with influence over you has much reason to correct it. Am I big enough is usually a permission question wearing a math costume. Most advisors are waiting for an invisible referee to blow a whistle and say, now you're ready. That referee does not exist, and your firm has little incentive to appoint one. The longer you believe you're too small, the longer you stay. Meanwhile, the moves keep happening. Fidelity's advisor movement study found that more than half of advisors had considered switching firms within a 5-year window, and roughly 1 in 4 actually moved. Diamond Consultants' annual transition report counted more than 11,000 experienced advisors changing firms in 2025, up about 16% from the year before. Those advisors are not uniformly the giants. They're the ones who ran their own numbers. I've said it on this show before, you're not too small. You might just be underinformed about what your own practice can actually support. The sheet cuts both ways too. Some advisors run it and find they do need more runway, and staying is a legitimate answer. Either way, you're deciding on arithmetic instead of folklore. Before you act on any of it, get the right people in your corner. An accountant to pressure test the revenue model and a securities attorney to read what you signed. Most advisors have neither on call, and that's the point. Line them up before the move, not after. If you want to know where your practice actually stands, we built a short assessment for exactly this. 6 questions, about 2 minutes, and it routes you to a private conversation or the research that fits your situation. It's free on our website at advisorgrowthlab.com. Measure your real position, not the imaginary threshold. Retire the magic number and run the sheet instead. clear eyes first, the move second. I'll see you tomorrow.